Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to 1 Chronicles chapter 13 today. We have a parallel account that is coming out of 2 Samuel chapter number 6. We've arrived at a point where we've got varying amounts of information from two different books within the inspired scripture. And so we like to try to make use of that. I generally stick with the place that has the most information and then bring in any unique information from the other. So we will start, as I said, in 1 Corinthians 13 in a moment. First, I want to talk about Jerusalem. David has just taken over the city that is known as Jerusalem, as his new capital city. The reason why he chose this place seems to be related to its location. It was originally part of the allotment given to the tribe of Benjamin, but they never developed it as one of their cities. After Joshua had destroyed it during his time, it was reoccupied and rebuilt by Canaanites who lived there right up until the time that David took it. But it is on the border between the tribe of Benjamin, which was the tribe of the first king, and the tribe of Judah, which is the tribe of the second king. So it's kind of a compromise position between those two tribes. It is also a little farther northward and more easily accessible from the north as well as from the south. But I think it also has a significance that goes back to the time of Abraham. The first time we hear about this city is in the story of Abraham, where he was having interaction with Melchizedek, who was the priest of God Most High. And this was all happening right around 2091 BC. That's more than 1,000 years before David. And it appears that at that time, there was a walled city of Salem, or Shalom, peace, in the language of the Hebrews. This city was located a little bit south of where the Temple Mount is today. It was an oval hilltop, about a third of a mile north to south, and about a tenth of a mile wide east to west. And it had the Gihon Spring on the eastern side of that hill. So it had good, solid, fresh water source. It had a wall of defense, and it was raised up. And it also had an agricultural area just to the north of it. On that hill was where they did their threshing of their grain, which is probably why by the time that Joshua arrived, the Canaanites that were living in this same city were now calling it Jebus, or Jebus, as we have it in our English Bibles, J-E-B-U-S. Jebus means threshing place. So this city had become a very important agricultural processing center for the Canaanites. When David took it over, he decided to give it a different name than Jebus. He starts calling it Yerushalem. And there's some debate as to exactly where he came up with that name. It's possible that he was just simply going back to the name Shalom, because Uru Shalem is the way that the foreign nations around the Canaanites refer to the city, because Uru in the Mesopotamian language means city. And Shalem then would be the name of that city. So Urushalem meant the city of Salem. But some commentators have suggested that what David was actually doing was taking the ancient name Shalem, or peace, and putting a form of a verb on the front of it, Yaru. Yaru means throwing. That's its literal meaning. Metaphorically, though, it can mean teaching. So that possibly David was giving this city the name Teaching Peace. And that would be an indicator of what he hoped and intended this capital city would be. It would be the city where the Israelis would be teaching one another and anyone else that would come there about peace. Peace with God, the God who created all things and who was providing atonement to bring back people into right relationship with himself. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of that background of the name of Jerusalem. And we will be now using that consistently for the name of this city, even though it had names earlier. Go to 1 Chronicles 13, where verse number 1 reports this. David consulted with the commanders of thousands and hundreds, with every leader. David said to all the assembly of Israel, "If it seems good to you, and from He who is our God, let us send abroad to our brothers who remain in all the lands of Israel, as well as to the priests and Levites in the cities that have pasture lands, that they may be gathered to us. Then let us bring up again the ark of our God to us, for we did not seek it in the days of Saul." So David starts reaching out from his new capital city to the leadership, to the military people, to the religious people, to the political people. And he says, "I want us to have this great big national gathering at the new capital. And I want us to bring the Ark of the Covenant to this capital city." Which makes good sense, because David intends for this to be the capital city for united Israel in every respect. Political, judgment-wise, legal, military, and religious. And so the religious part of it would be, let's get God's throne here, because He is the King of Israel, and His throne ought to be at the capital city. So verse number 4 says that all the assembly agreed to do so, for the thing was right in the eyes of all the people. So it sounded like a good idea. Verse 5. So David assembled all Israel from the Nile of Egypt. Now the wording there is a little bit, I think, misleading, not in a mean sense, but it is just not as precise as I think it needs to be. We're not talking about the actual Nile River here. The word, and more than likely you've got a footnote here, is Shihor. And it seems to be a reference to a river that served as a boundary line between Canaan, or Israel at this point, and Egypt itself. And that sounds very much like what we call the Wadi al-Arish, which is a wadi, or a wet weather stream, that drains the northern Sinai into the southeastern corner of the Mediterranean Sea. It dumps out by the modern city of Arish. This has served for a long time as the boundary marker between the area of Israel and where the Egyptian territory starts. So that's the one I think it's referencing. So he's effectively saying from this southwestern side of Israel to Lebo Hamat. Now, Lebo Hamat means the entrance to Hamat, which Hamat was a city up north of Israel, but there was a roadway that left Israel proper and went into a narrow valley somewhere a few miles north of Dan. And so Lebo Hamat becomes the northern marker of the boundary between Israel and all the territories north of it. So he's effectively saying from the southern western border all the way up to the northern border of Israel. Let's assemble everybody. So that's what he does. To bring the Ark of God from Kiriath Yearim. Now Kiriath Yearim is the city where the Ark of the Covenant has been since it arrived back in Israel from its brief stay in Philistia. That was back at the very beginning of the ministry of Samuel the prophet. So we're talking about almost 50 years ago now that it's been there at Kiriath Jearim. So he wants to bring it from where it's at up to the new capital city. Verse number 6. David and all Israel went up from Baalah, that is, to Kiriath Yearim, that belongs to Judah. Now, we need to talk about the multiple names of this place where the ark has been. Kiriath Yearim literally means the city of the forest, or of forests. So it was a reference to this town being kind of in a heavily forested area. But it got a secondary name because it was the site of the Ark of the Covenant of Kiriath Baal, which means the city of the Lord. Because at this time in history, the Israelis were borrowing from the Canaanite language the word Baal, which means Lord. And so because of that, it also got the name Baalah, which is a feminine form of the word Lord. And so it's not mistress, as I've seen it presented in some commentaries, but rather it's the feminine form for a city that is devoted to the Lord. So Baalah basically would mean the city of the Lord. And it's all called that because the Ark of the Covenant has been there for over 40 years. So they're going to go to this city and they're going to bring the Ark of the Covenant something like 10 to 12 road miles south and east to Jerusalem. So they were there to bring up from there the Ark of God, which is called by the name of He Who Is, who sits enthroned above the Kerubim. And that's a reference to the Ark itself. Now, the Ark is not a highly decorated storage box. We need to get that out of our heads. The Ark of the Covenant was a sedan chair. It was a portable throne. Very highly decorated. It was made of gold, and the seat had two angelic figures at each end or each side of the seat. These are the four-faced, four-winged angelic creatures. Two of their wings go up and over the top of the ark and kind of form a canopy. And so it is imagined that God is seated upon this throne underneath the wings of the cherubim and between their faces. So that's the way it's imagined and how it's described here. So verse number 7, they carried the Ark of God, or the throne of God for all intents and purposes, on a new cart from the house of Abinadab And Uzzah and Ahio were driving the cart. And this is where things start to go wrong. They intend to do great honor and pomp and circumstance for the moving of the throne of God to its new location at the capital city of Israel. And so they have a brand new wheeled cart made that they can lift it up on, put it on, and it can be prominently displayed for all the crowds along the parade route to see as it goes by. And two men are put in charge of making sure the cart moves smoothly along the road for the couple of hours that it's going to take them to get to Jerusalem. The few hours, I guess I should say, that it might take them to get to Jerusalem. But the Ark of the Covenant was never supposed to be put on a cart. The instructions given at the very beginning was that it was to be carried on its carrying poles on the shoulders of a very specific group of priests, or Levites. And so they have totally blown that off. They've acted almost in that period of the Judges thing where they just did what they felt like. Let's keep reading. Verse 8. David and all Israel were rejoicing before God with all their might, with song and lyres and harps and tambourines and cymbals and trumpets. So David, who is very musically interested, probably writes some brand new songs of praise, maybe even designs some new styles of instruments. We've got mostly stringed and percussive instruments here, although we do have some brass or woodwinds of different types that will make all this wonderful celebratory music for the great parade of God's throne from its place at Kiriath-Jearim to its new place at Jerusalem. But then the worst possible thing happens. Somewhere along the parade route, verse 9, when they came to the threshing floor of Kidon, Uzzah put out his hand to take hold of the ark, for the oxen stumbled. So one of the ox apparently puts its foot wrong on the path. Maybe it hits a chuck hole. Maybe it hits a gopher hole or a pothole of some sort, and it makes it kind of stumble off to one side. And of course, it's tied up to a yoke, which is tied up to this cart, so that upsets the cart. And the Ark of the Covenant kind of tips over a little bit to one side. Uzzah, who must be on that side of the ark, instantly reaches out with his hand and touches the actual box part of the throne of God, and he is struck dead for touching God's ark. So verse 10, the anger of He Who Is was kindled against Uzzah, and he struck him down because he put out his hand to the ark, and he died there before God. Now, we shouldn't have been surprised that this was the result of touching the ark, because the scripture was very plain, given through Moses, that the ark was to be carried on poles by a specific group of Levites. Nobody else was supposed to be anywhere near it. It was not to be touched at all by anyone. Even the high priest only drops a little bit of blood onto the mercy seat. He never touches it. And so this man has violated the sanctity of God's throne, and that brings with it execution. Now, I understand he was acting in good faith, but he violated the sanctity of God's throne. And so David is angry because he who is had broken out against Uzzah. And that place was called Perez Uzzah to this day, which is just Hebrew for the breakout against Uzzah. So David is mad. David is mad that here they are trying to do great things for the name of God, try to bring the Ark of God from a place that has only a special name because the Ark was there, to the place where God's teaching is going to bring peace, to the new capital city where everybody will be able to gather together and worship God and work according to God's law, and somebody ends up dead because God strikes out against him. And so David is mad at God. And we know that people react this way a lot of the time when they do something that they're not supposed to and they get in trouble over it. They get mad at the punishment. But we've also got this in verse 12. David was afraid of God that day and said, "How can I bring the Ark of God home to me?" So he wasn't just simply angry. He was also scared. He's got one guy killed by touching the Ark. What happens if other people get killed by being anywhere near the Ark? And so he's afraid to do anything else. So he decides to delay the project. Verse 13, so David did not take the Ark home into the city of David, but took it aside to the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite. Now, Obed-Edom may in fact be a Levite who has a job that's associated with the tabernacle already. It says here he's a Gittite, which means he's from Gath, but probably not Philistine Gath. There are other Gaths that we know of in the land of Israel, and it could be that there's one very near to Jerusalem at this time. So Obed-Edom, whose name literally means the servant of mankind. Now, Edom, I know we're familiar with it, is the name of a country, but it's also the spelling for the word mankind in Hebrew. So servant of mankind is a very good Hebrew name. So they take it aside to the house of Obed-Edom, and the Ark of God remained with the household of Obed-Edom in his house 3 months. And he who is blessed the household of Obed-Edom and all that he had. So we're going to leave the Ark of the Covenant there at Obed-Edom's house for 3 months. And other things start happening that we're going to take care of in our next session. But one thing that also happens around this time is that David has a neighbor to the north that wants to welcome him to kingship and congratulate him on having this new capital city. So chapter 14 of 1 Chronicles says, Hiram, king of Tyre. So this would be the Phoenicians along the coast of the Mediterranean, immediately north of Israel. The king of Tyre sent messengers to David and cedar trees, also masons and carpenters, to build a house for him. So he gifts him with a palace. He provides both materials and manpower and the artisans who will make this wonderful palace for David at his new capital city. Now, the Phoenicians are renowned for their building skills. They can build magnificent ships and wonderful temples and palaces. And so this is quite the gift. And so verse number 2 says, David knew that he who is had established him as king over Israel, and that his kingdom was highly exalted for the sake of his people Israel. So David is made happy by the fact that he's got international acclaim as well. That the Phoenicians are glad that he's king and want to help him to present himself properly as a king with this palace. That being said, not all of David's near neighbors are happy with him taking Jerusalem and making it his new capital. When we come back next week, we will talk about the Philistine reaction.